This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman, and welcome to the show that walks you through some fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Together with Sharat Kutin, we try to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and frameworks to better understand how society works. Each week, we discuss a classic text or an idea we hope will shed light on the world around you. Unfortunately, as you can probably guess through the fact that I'm the one reading the introduction, Sharat cannot be here. But we do have a special guest in the studio. He's a fellow comrade of mine at Nottingham University Malaysia campus. He is Douglas Sheng. Welcome, Douglas.
Hi.
So today, we're going to talk about the famous Slavoj Žižek.
Very controversial kind of figure, particularly because he's a contemporary, very pop kind of philosopher, right? And he says a lot of controversial things. One would probably accuse him of being universalist, being patriarchal. And sometimes we wonder, why is it that we need to listen to people like him in the first place?
Great, great. So you've pretty much, I think, captured the essence of his sort of aura, right? He's a pop philosopher. He's very controversial. But perhaps before we get into details, you could explain to us a bit more. What is a pop philosopher? In what way is this guy pop?
I'd say that he's pop primarily because of his engagement with the public, right? So he does a lot of lectures. He does a lot of talks, but very short kind of talks, and gives a lot of very popular kind of examples. So he likes to draw from Batman, for instance, The Matrix, and stuff like that. They are very interesting kind of examples for you to go into his philosophy that he likes to talk about. So, for instance, psychoanalysis and things like that.
Yeah, one of the things that always is noticeable in his writing is the Kinder Bueno example, the Kinder Egg. Or something. I've never had that. I see it around, you know. But he, like you say, he does refer to items and sort of the sphere of popular consumption and tries to show sort of why these things actually have philosophical resonance. These are not just things you come across and buy at the store. They can actually teach you stuff.
Yep. And, well, he likes to dwell a lot into contradictions, right? And that's where psychoanalysis helps illuminate a lot. So things like, for instance, the chocolate laxative, which is a contradiction by itself, right? So you eat chocolate to help you poop better, you know? So that's kind of the weird things that he picks up and tries to explicate through his theories.
If you are familiar with him, you also notice that he's very flamboyant.
Yep.
Yeah, and that makes him rather different than the usual subdued academic that we always imagine, right, when we think of professors and whatnot. So all this I find very interesting because you're, how old are you, 24?
25.
25, Malaysian urban consumer class. And you suddenly somehow landed onto reading him and reading him quite closely. How did it happen? Like, what drew you to him?
I come from a psychology background, and psychology is one of those fields where, ironically speaking, Freud is dismissed completely. You know, as a psychology student, Freud is just... But I think that when it comes to human behavior, there is an irrational component that cannot really be erased. And that's how psychoanalysis actually fills the gap, I'd say. And I encountered Žižek when I was trying to do an essay on racism. And I realized that a lot of the theories on racism doesn't really explain much because they talk about, you know, value differences, they talk about skin color, but they don't explain the irrational component of it. And I realized that I probably need to go into something else. So I went into, I started doing a class on theory, and Lacan was my entry point. And I from there, I realized that there's this controversial guy named Žižek who works on things like this.
Then you also mentioned the second thing about him, and that's his controversies. What makes him so controversial? Can you give some examples?
I remember a lecture that he was giving. I can't remember exactly where, but he was using this joke. He called it the dusty balls of capitalism. And basically, he was trying to make a joke, but he used rape as a kind of example, and that obviously riled up a lot of feminists, and, you know, they started shooting him for it. In terms of his method, I'd say that we can kind of sort of see why he chooses jokes as a metaphor, because in a psychoanalytic sense, it works. Because when you think about Freud, for instance, you are thinking about the manifest and the latent when it comes to dream work, right? And he's saying that, well, the content of the dream itself is not so important, but rather the form and how it illuminates the unconscious processes that are behind it. So for Zizek, his jokes do the same thing as these dreams, and that's how he tries to interpret human behavior, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, in Freudian terms, jokes do the same thing that dreams do. They're one of the roads into understanding unconscious, and it's interesting that he manifests that. But I think personally for me, and this is something we haven't touched on yet, is what makes him interesting is the fact that he's very well versed in Western popular culture, mm-hmm. but he's actually Eastern European. He's Slovenian, right. And he's not very young either, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe a bit of biographical details to kind of match some of these descriptions you have.
Well, paradoxically speaking, like what you have mentioned, he's like a 60 over years old mm-hmm. philosopher schooled in, I think, German idealism for his PhD, going into the old guns like Kant, Hegel, and stuff like that, that you probably wouldn't in your right mind link it to pop culture in the first place, right? But I think he's trying to get at something here, because he's a communist of sorts. So his main enemy has always been capitalism, right? And how best to deal with capitalism. And so probably that's kind of why he wants to get a wider audience to kind of sort of disseminate his views so that he can improve the situation further. That's how I see his project.
Anyway. And interestingly enough, I mean, as we know, he's Slovenian, which was a former Soviet, part of the Soviet bloc. Mm. And from what I recall, he also ran for president at some point, yeah. And unsuccessfully.
Yeah, according to Wiki, he said, they were saying he narrowly lost the elections, but I was trying to get the numbers, but I couldn't, so...
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that, you know, we're locating his style, we're locating his context, location, mm-hmm. and age. But how does all of this relate to your own work, Douglas? Maybe this is a good way to get into a bit of why you're reading Zizek and how this helps you as a Malaysian.
One way I'm reading Zizek is by looking at how he contemplates, for instance, multiculturalism and also race. Because I think Zizek has a very strange way of looking at race, because he decontextualizes it altogether. And he goes into the psyche, right? And how he explains race and, for instance, fundamentalism is very different. He looks into enjoyment instead of things like colonization, stuff like that. And it gives you a fresh perspective on how racial relations are supposed to work in Malaysia, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you explain a bit more on how all of that is couched in terms of enjoyment? I mean, we don't think of racism as something... Mm-hmm. pleasurable in that way, you know. I don't know, racists in their bitterness and indignation, they don't think of themselves as having fun doing it. So how is he shedding light onto those phenomena differently?
I remember an instance where, if you can recall, there was this episode where Teresa Kopp had this the
Chinese New Year video greeting.
Yep, and there were this bunch of Malay extremists who actually did a blood splattering thing, right?
Yes, yeah. And mind you, listeners, this is not Slavoj Žižek's example. This is Douglas interpolating Žižek. But go on, Douglas.
Interpolating Žižek, indeed.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is that in the interview of those Malay leaders, I can't remember his name right mm-hmm. now, but he was talking about on and on about how Malays actually want harmony, unity, and stuff like that. But then when the interviewer asked another question, so why is it that you do violent acts if all you want is harmony and stuff? And he started to laugh. He laughed and, ha ha ha, well, sometimes we just need to shake politics up. And you know, there's a clear contradiction in that sense, right? I know better, but I still believe in something else. So there's this contradiction that Zizek likes to go into, and he will think about it in terms of a sadistic kind of enjoyment, right? So there is a sort of pleasure by inflicting kind of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that might be one of the ways that we can look into race fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So by exercising power, one gets to be in touch with some inherent pleasure that is connected to that yep. very act of expressing power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I mean, once you look at those contradictions, once you look at how these things, pleasure and hatred might blend, you realize that a lot of the times these agents, these so-called racists or something like that, to make it crudely, they're not completely aware of their motivations. Sometimes it's different than what they outwardly manifest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is where psychoanalysis comes into play. Like, mm-hmm. Can you just explain to our listeners, you know, what that is? You mentioned it before. Now you can perhaps describe it a bit more and how he uses it.
Well, I think the main maxim that a lot of psychoanalysts like to use is this one called desire is always the desire of the other. So the other is always this object that kind of sort of decides things for you, and some or something that you can pass your own beliefs or enjoyments into. He is talking about this idea of interpassivity, okay? And interpassivity is one of these ideas where it's the opposite of interactivity. And what Zizek is trying to say is that we delegate enjoyment to an object that does things for us. So for instance, if you think about a person who, like me, I like to download anime and watch anime, right? But just by downloading the anime itself, I get a sense of satisfaction of a similar kind of satisfaction from watching it, for instance. So his argument would be that the anime, the downloading itself has already fulfilled the kind of satisfaction that I would actually gain from watching it, for instance. And that's how I pass on my feelings, my desires to an other, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm thinking of downloading ebooks. Mm-hmm. I do the same thing. Right. Or buying books, really. Yeah. Sometimes you just buy them. Yeah. The acquisition is more, you know, memorable even than the engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's how he says that the interpassive subject is one that passes on his belief. And he also has a lot of...
But how is that passing on belief, though? I mean, you're just downloading. Mm-hmm. And it's not quite clear to me how that can be considered any passing of belief.
Yep. I think that's where a lot of criticisms about Zizek actually comes into play, right? Yeah. Because he likes to use examples as his kind of theoretical proof. And when it doesn't really explain certain things, he will move on to other examples instead. So that's how he kind of writes his...
Yeah, but can you try to explain the sort of how that mm-hmm. relates? I mean, you clearly resonate with this, right? So yep. How is that a belief? How is belief implicated in that?
He used another example instead, where he uses this idea of the Tibetan prayer wheel. And he says that, you know, when you pray with the Tibetan prayer wheel, the prayer wheel actually kind of helps you pray on your behalf while your mind wanders off and thinks about something else. So similarly, you can get a sense of, for instance, Christianity. So you surrender yourself to a God who does the worrying, does the suffering and stuff that for you instead.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one way to look at it.
That's one way to look at interpassivity.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sort of suspending your own intervention in something and leaving it to kind of something else.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting stuff, Douglas. We're actually coming to the end of the first part. I think you've sketched a really good summary of what Zizek offers. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Night School. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. Sharat's not here today, but we do have Douglas Shang, fellow student at Nottingham Malaysia campus in Semenye, talking about Slavoj Zizek. So yeah, welcome to the show if you just joined us. I think, you know, we've covered a bit about his style, his approach and his background, and you sketched a bit on the role that psychoanalysis plays, you know, it's largely as a very robust method to really know the complexities of human feelings, you know, mm-hmm. and contradictions that really animates our behaviors and largely in ways we're not aware of, right? Mm-hmm. So in that sense, he's very useful for bringing into a wider discourse this set of theories. But he's also, as you say, a communist. Mm-hmm. Now, this is BFM, it's a business station, and this is Malaysia. Communists have been defeated long ago.
Yeah.
Why is Zizek so popular, even if he's still a communist? Help us understand the role that the communist imagination plays in his work.
Well, I think it adds to the controversy, right? I think that's probably why he's so popular in the first place, in a popular sense,
mm-hmm.
because it's a communist philosopher who talks about popular culture. That's probably kind of a tagline that actually catches people's attention in mm-hmm. the first place. But like I was mentioning earlier, his main kind of project has always been to go against capitalism. And his main concern right now is how the left is beginning to lose its power, so to speak. There's no real vision or no real action that the left can take at this point to actually kind of sort of revitalize its tendency. So he's a communist because he's trying to resurrect this kind of ideals and try to overcome the capitalist ideals, which at this point he's still finding difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think anybody not familiar with left discourse would just be balking right now. They'll be like, what's going on here? Why is this guy still a communist? Haven't we moved on? So for somebody completely new to Žižek, right, they would, I think, rightly be asking, what to Žižek is particularly the problem with capitalism? I mean, every critic of capitalism will have some issue, like core issue, like for Marx, is alienation, perhaps. So what does he take the kind of Marxist sort of view of alienated labor, the idea that we don't really have power over the work we do, as core to his critique of capitalism, or is it something else that he add?
I think his ideas of capitalism actually draws more strongly from Negri and Hart. And he's looking at capitalism as this very dynamic kind of entity where it overcomes its own limits. That's the main quote that he writes in his book.
Can you explain a bit more what that means?
In a sense, because if you think about capitalism, it's a very dynamic kind of process. It encourages choice, for instance. Everybody has choices. You can do different things. And the market economy is something that actually encourages choices, right? So there are a lot of ways to get around things. And that's the main nature of the capitalism that he's trying to say. And in that sense, then, resisting capitalism becomes a lot harder because it's this free-flowing kind of thing. You can do this, you can do that. And suddenly real resistance, in a communist sense, disappears, right? So
what's the second half of that? If communism is, I mean, if capitalism is giving us all these choices, it's making our lives more dynamic, what would be the reason to oppose it? What would Žižek say?
I suppose if you want to look at it from a big picture sense, then capitalism is this kind of monstrous thing that constantly evolves. But the problem doesn't really go away. So problems of oppression, problems of, like what you mentioned, climate change, these are the kind of stuff that are getting worse at this point. And capitalism cannot really offer solutions. I think in abstract sense, that's how he would look at it. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to put them all into one because he addresses these different issues at different junctures, right? So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how has he been received? I mean, is the popularity largely an adoration or largely an annoyance? What do you gather from how widely he's being read?
Well, to get a sense of that, I actually went through his book reviews, so reviews of his books, and you kind of get a mix in some sense. You either love him or you hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And
why do people hate him? I mean, okay, other than the controversies, is it because of his style? Is it?
It's because of his theory, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, continental theory, it's a very difficult kind of philosophy to grasp because of its language.
Mm-hmm.
And Žižek doesn't make it simple at all when it comes to stuff like that. So people will accuse him of being obscure and stuff like that. So Chomsky, for one, doesn't like him because of his style.
And Chomsky is a famous Noam Chomsky of MIT, a linguist, activist, philosopher. Yeah.
Yep. You can say that Chomsky is his opposite in some sense. He's the rational, analytic philosopher who makes things very clear. He's not a very agitated kind of individual. When he speaks monotonously and stuff like that. While Žižek is the complete opposite. So if you're looking at philosophers, it's both sides of the extreme kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's why I think, especially in a United States kind of environment where science and empiricism is very strong, Žižek might be a bit hard to swallow because his examples, I mean, jokes, you try and put that into an empirical context, it just doesn't jive, right?
Because his charisma, he's had, what, two documentaries made of him?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, can
no,
you
three.
Three, yeah.
Well, a lot of people introduce him as the Elvis of cultural theory, which tries to, I think that might be the problem with his documentaries and films as well, because they tend to capture his more controversial side, but they don't really go into the more theoretical components, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
what are these films? Can you just list them for us?
So one of it is Žižek with an exclamation mark that it goes through his philosophies and his, basically it's just a documentary about his thoughts and stuff like that. There are also stuff that he himself has hosted as a kind of moderator of sorts, which are his pervert guides. So pervert guide to ideology, pervert's guide to cinema, where he talks about the two main things in his actual work, which are psychoanalysis and ideology.
And these are documentaries that he made?
No, somebody else made it, but they got him to do the narration and the theorizing and everything. So mm-hmm. basically the director is just directing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are these films a good alternative to reading him? Do you get as much from these films as you would reading him, or is it less? Is it watered down stuff? Or?
It's definitely not watered down, because the concepts that he uses are definitely the concepts that he would use even in his own writings. Of course, you don't get the full picture of it, but if you want an entry point, then that would be great, because he tends to recycle his examples, which is another criticism that people like to use against him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were trying to get a sense of the problems, the nature of the problems that he's trying to point out, then the films are still a good introduction to go in.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say, yeah.
And they're available online, are they? Is it?
Well, YouTube is your answer, I guess.
Yeah.
Somebody just uploaded it. I don't think they're legal.
He's a communist. I didn't think he'd care about property rights. And I wonder too, because if you're Malaysian, you will have to eventually turn to thinkers who are of a rather really different context mm-hmm. than ours, you know. Has it been easy to relate with him?
It is easy to relate, but at a risk, I'd say, because when it comes to Zizek's ideas, like I mentioned earlier, he was criticized for being a universalist. And universalist basically means that the theory can be used for anything, and, you know, it will still kind of sort of logically fit. And that would be the criticism of a lot of race scholars, I'd say, because if you put in history, you put in the context and stuff, and you will realize that probably the theory might not really fit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put it in isolation, then it might make sense.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's how I put it.
Yeah, and particularly in the Malaysian context, you cannot avoid race.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough too, it's not been the kind of experience of race you would think of in Western Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there was a, you know, Second World War that broke out along racial lines, and you had what happened in Eastern Europe too, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fall of Yugoslavia, where identity was embattled. It seems like, do you sense that racism here is more irrational or less irrational in Malaysia?
More irrational or less irrational?
What do you gather?
Well, I'm obviously biased, but I'd say more, right?
Yeah.
But that's probably why Zizek cannot give you the full picture, right? And it's, when you think of, say, Islamic fundamentalism in Malaysia, you would definitely have to think about revivalism.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about revivalism, you have to think about anti-modernist kind of impulses, and you need to think about decolonization and a lot of these kind of things that are running in the background that actually you have to take into account to give a full picture. But when it comes to psychoanalysis, you can just kind of put it all together and say that, well, enjoyment is the key to understanding why people like each other or dislike each other and stuff like that. So, yeah, it tends to overgeneralize and oversimplify things, mm-hmm. I'd say.
As somebody in Klang Valley, you can't help but to be a consumer. Does reading Zizek make you feel guilty or make you feel happier mm-hmm. as a consumer? What's the experience been like?
Well, like all good psychoanalysts will tell you, probably ambivalent will be the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes to capitalism and consumerism, I think Zizek provides a very interesting view that we can all take on board with us, I think. Because what he's trying to say is that in the modern capitalist, consumerist kind of place, there are a lot of injunctions to enjoy. So, for instance, I remember going to Starbucks and I realized that when they pass you the cup, they will actually draw a smiley face and say, you know, they wrote there, enjoy. And that is kind of how the current situation, the current capitalist society is working. They are going towards a very hedonistic, very pleasure-based kind of economy, I would say. And Zizek is trying to say that this so much impulse to enjoy that it becomes a duty to enjoy. And ironically speaking, when you don't enjoy, then you feel guilty. And that's where alienation comes into place and stuff like that. So in that sense, that's a very interesting thing that we can think about. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're nearing the end of the show, mm-hmm. Douglas. Can you recommend some books for people to look into if they want to start reading Zizek?
There's a new book by him, co-authored with Nadia from Pussy Riot, which is worth reading. Can get it online from Verso.
What makes it worth reading?
Well, it's a very short book. and he outlines his ideas and also his ideals, because he's clearly in favor and also thinks very highly of Pussy Riot, which is a punk provocateur band who does very provocative kind of acts in protest, for instance, having sex in front of the church, stuff like that. And he identifies very strongly with the philosophies and stuff. And you can see how he articulates it in very short letters that is very readable. And also the book is very short and very cheap. You can get it online for about 15 ringgit or so.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one book you can get into. And of course, his lectures and his films as well.
And you can find that on YouTube, largely.
Yeah.
Even his lectures, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Wonderful, Douglas. Thank you for sharing. And to all you listeners, thank you for listening in, as usual. This is Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, and we have been discussing the famous Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek. You're listening to Night School, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.